The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
I help people every day to improve their health. Sometimes they've had lifelong issues or not fully recovered after a stressful event. The doctors have often run out of ideas. My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and also the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that's helping people with cancer to access integrative medicine, a broad approach that looks to support body, mind and spirit. So, integrative medicine is nothing if not multifaceted, and today's show will be focusing on some more unusual territory by talking to Fiona Russell. Fiona is one of the small band of people who take the radical decision not to have any of the treatments on offer from the NHS. So this could be described as a truly alternative approach, and it's at one end of a spectrum of approaches going right through to exclusively conventional methods at the other. So while we at Yes to Life believe that there are generally benefits on offer from across the spectrum, some few individuals are very clear that they don't want any conventional treatment, and we respect this. For those who have successful outcomes then, it's certainly very interesting to ask about the things they did do that contributed to that. So I'm talking to Fiona today over Skype at her home in the West Country to find out more. Hi Fiona, welcome to the Yes to Life show.
Hi Robin, very nice to be here.
So you're a physiotherapist, not an obvious candidate for a show about integrative medicine for cancer, but you do have your own cancer story to tell. And this has led you to develop ideas about health in several different areas. I understand you're from a deeply medical family, so an independent way of thinking about your health, maybe it comes fairly naturally to you. But could you start off by briefly telling us about your diagnosis and all the strands of your own programme of care, or at least all the ones that you feel have been important?
Right, gosh. So I found I had a breast lump on my right breast in 2016, the end of September, early October. Mm-hmm. I was actually, it was very much an overnight thing. You know, it was one day it wasn't there and one day it was there.
Right.
Yeah, so I was already actually booked to go to the ashram where I practiced with a teacher a bioenergetic meditation. And so I didn't go to my doctor right away. I just thought I'll go to the ashram and practice. And I had wondered 2 years earlier, 2 or 3 years earlier, I'd been seeing things from Bruce Lipton and talk about medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I wondered what I would do if it happened to me. And right. So when I was in that state, I was, by this time, 3 years later, I really knew that I wouldn't choose orthodox medicine. I wouldn't choose chemotherapy or radiation, right, or necessarily surgery. And it wasn't until November when I came back and we went to see my GP. The ashram, Ratu had said, don't be scared of the energy, allow it to heal you, and allow, which is what we do in our practice, is really allowing the energy to free up the body and heal the body. So I went to see my GP, who said, well, let's at least get it diagnosed. He's a homeopath himself, so he was quite okay with me choosing my route. And when you go to Salisbury Hospital, I went to Salisbury Hospital to be diagnosed. On a Monday, they will do the diagnostic testing and then they'll give you the results. You go back on the Friday for the results. So I went and they were very, very sweet. And I do remember when they asked suggested that I had a biopsy. I had a little cry, and they were and allowed it because, of course, I was aware that having a biopsy can actually spread cells. And but I thought, well, if I think that I can heal this myself, then, you know, whether cells spread, I should be able to clear that as well.
Okay.
So they took the biopsy, and then I was put into a consulting room to see the consultant, and she came in, and she barely introduced herself, and she said to me, well, expect the worst, because it looks like the worst, and walked out. And so I was left
incredible.
There. Oh, wow.
Unbelievable, yeah.
It was a little bit not really a great thing to be saying to someone, I thought. So I went back on the Friday, and my aunt was visiting someone else. So it was nice that I had some family there. And she waited in the waiting room. And I was seen in another consulting room. And the consultant and an assistant came in. And the consultant, I was sat in a chair, and she was perched up on the treatment couch. And she basically sort of told me my diagnosis, and sort of I felt a bit like a deer in the headlights. And she told me what treatment they would do. And I was quite pleased that she had to leave. And I was left with this very sweet nurse who gently told me, you know, you will be taken care of, and this we'll do this and we'll do this. And the words just came out of my mouth, but I don't want to do any of that, thank you. And I didn't, you know, I just knew I wasn't going to do it. So I left, and my aunt was there, and I was able to say goodbye to her, and then sat in my car and had a little cry and thought, well, that's the last time you feel a victim here. You get on with your life. Mm. And so I did.
Okay, so what did you do? Just give us some headlines of what you did do. I'd like to go into all of them as the show goes on. But, yeah, what are the main things that you actually did practically do about your situation?
So I was practicing my meditation regularly anyway. Okay. I was already eating. I've always been quite good with my diet. I haven't been never been a big drinker or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I knew we had to cut out as much sugar as possible, because that does get sucked up by the cancer site to grow more if you're eating sugars. I actually started riding because my legs were quite blocked, so it was quite hard for me to run terribly well. To me, that was fear of moving forwards, fear in general. My knees were terrible. I'd noticed that if I was out for a run, I think I hadn't quite stopped running, but I'd noticed, you know, sometime before, about maybe even the year before, that it was hard for me to squat down and up comfortably. You know, I really was feeling terrible in my legs. And I was already using turmeric, raw turmeric, in different ways in my smoothies, and I thought that I'd see if I could use cannabis, but I thought, well, I'll make it easy. I'll use it if it comes easily to me, and then it did. I did grow it 2 years in a row. The following summer, I grew some. Both times, I was given seedlings by friends that had them available for me, and they grew without any assistance. You know, they just grew so easily,
does, yeah.
And they were the most vibrant plants I'd ever seen.
Right.
And I've used it as food. I've used it as a herb in my food, and it's been very helpful. I also had found a nutritionist to start seeing. Her name is June, and I started seeing her in June 2016. And she uses kinesiology to test what supplements, what I needed. And having taken quite a good history of what I was eating and what was going on for me, what problems I had. So I started seeing her fairly regularly, about once a month I see her. And I still have been seeing her. And it's she's been wonderful, not just from the nutritional point of view or from the supplement and being able to test what I needed. But just as she is, I think she has some sort of psychology qualification as well.
Mm-hmm.
She's been practicing like this for over 30 years herself. So very practiced in chronic illness and helping people with their chronic illness. So that's been great and lovely for my family, because of course my family, with who the rest of them aren't so medical now, they were, my father was a doctor and his family were all doctors. They were concerned that I was, as my sister put it, doing a home bodge job.
Mm. Well, I was going to ask you about how you're getting on with the family. With the what you described about your medical background, I assumed that there was going to be more than a bit of concern coming your way.
Yes, luckily over the years they've sort of seen how I've been managing it and how I'm doing, so they're much more comfortable with that now.
Okay.
Although I haven't got my my mother does some of the meditation, and she definitely notices a difference for herself. And she's seeing my nutritionist now, and did tell my nutritionist that she finds it beneficial too. But I haven't got the rest of them trying it yet.
No, right, okay.
I did go to a meditation day, a guided meditation day, and in one of the guided meditations, we were asked to ask our higher self what our higher self wanted us to do in our life for ourselves, what would help us most.
Right.
And what I got was to stretch myself, not just physically, but in every area of my life. And I have found that with the meditation, I've been releasing so much stuff out of my body. My flexibility has improved so much.
Hmm.
But what's amazing to me is how the restrictions that I had in my body, how many layers I was going through, you know, just more and more and more to bring myself into alignment. And I'm still not fully there. I don't think we ever achieve the ultimate alignment, but you're always working towards it. And it certainly feels very good. I feel so much better in my body. My body feels so much better. You know, people complain to me that they're getting old, and I'm like, no, it's not aging. We are brought up to believe that we age, when in fact I have friends that doctors who teach about longevity. So I think it's a bit of a learned indoctrination. And so I've freed up my body to the point where I'm like, wow, it feels so much better. And I think we should be able to live much longer, healthier, happier lives.
All for that. All right. So, look, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you got to there? Just summarise your background, what you were doing up until you were diagnosed, and a little bit more about this kind of medicine in the family.
So I became a physio back in my early 20s.
Yeah.
And I also was a runner and I loved skiing. So I moved into cross-country skiing and quickly into biathlon, because the women were going to be in the Olympics for biathlon in 92. We nearly got to the Olympics. I got to the pre-Olympics. And then I actually chose to go off to America for a job in Colorado. I was offered a job in Colorado, which was something it wasn't really necessarily my choice to go to America, but it seemed like a good opportunity. So off I went, got married or remarried, because I had been married in Scotland. I was living up in Scotland so that I could easily train with the teams up in Scotland.
Right.
I was living in Glencoe before I went to America. So wonderful places, you know, I lived and trained in amazing countryside or mountains, and traveled in the winter to race and compete. So I took myself away off to America and was able to work and continue skiing. Got remarried over there and had one son, and I felt quite trapped actually in my relationship over there. I'd put in all my inheritance and equity into our buildings and property, I didn't have control over that. Everything was in my husband's name. I wanted my son to have some education over here, so I brought my son back with my husband's consent, but he then chose after 2 years that he didn't want to come over here anymore. So he stayed over there, and I've been going through a divorce since then. Unfortunately, it failed because they decided it wasn't fair for him to have to defend himself in this country. So I've just had to refile that. So it's been a considerable stress on my life, I suppose, having to move and having to move and having to move. Hmm. Although it has allowed me to see some wonderful villages and get to a point where I'm more comfortable or happier in my choice of where I want to be, and to be, yeah, be more ready with what I'm wanting in my life.
Hmm. Do you connect up the stresses involved in all this with your eventual health problems?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the relationship had a big influence on my health. And this is a big point. When I do believe, and in metamedicine, which I've trained in something called metamedicine, I haven't done a huge amount in it, but one of the main points in that we bring up is that when you've had stressful conditions, continue to live and cope with that until you come to a point where you resolve the issue that brought on the stress. You resolve that in your mind or in your body, but then you have to clear it out of your body energetically. So you're in that state of stress in sympathetic overdrive, if you like, and then you drop into a parasympathetic healing response. And that's usually when the pain or the illness manifests. But then it's a matter of continuing to process it out of your body. And I think this is what's missing a lot in health, is that when an illness comes manifests, everyone thinks, this is so awful, I've got this illness. But in fact, you've manifested it because of what was, and not what is now. You've already changed a lot by then, and you've hopefully even got yourself out of the situation that brought it on. And you have to then trust and find the tools that you need to process it out of your body. So luckily, I knew about that, and I do feel like that's what I've been doing.
Mm. And you used the term there, meta-medicine. Do you want to just tell us what that means, what it is?
Why Am I Sick is a book by Richard Fluke.
Okay.
And it's a process of sort of identifying what... You don't actually need to identify what it was that brought on some illness, but it's a way of looking at your life in terms of stresses that you've had that might have brought on an illness. And even the structures of the body, in that the skin, for instance, is the same as the nerves. They develop at the same time, so that's to do with protection. So it's about your perception. If you perceive yourself to be in a state of threat or a situation that you perceive to be dangerous for yourself, you will hold that in your body, and so it'll manifest. That's what will manifest. So you have to be able to trust at a deeper level that you are taken care of energetically, so that you can trust always that we're taken care of on a deeper level energetically by a greater intelligence, such as God or energy, the universe, whatever you want to call it.
Hmm. Okay, so obviously that is quite a key element of how you see well-being, that it's not just a practical physical thing as the health service would like to see it. But some things I assume you think are just physical. I mean, for example, if you're exposed to a toxin or some radiation or something, you'd have consequences of that probably. And some things at the other end of the spectrum would purely be come from, say, the psychological and emotional area, e.g. if you had something like a long-term depression. But an awful lot of things that happen to us are probably in that middle territory between those two extremes. They're a bit of one and a bit of the other, a kind of coming together maybe of psychological and emotional difficulties along with some physical difficulties. Would that be how you'd see it?
Yes, I think the toxins one is a difficult one because there's so many toxins that we're coming in.
Tell me about it.
So many. And of course, forget global warming. I don't mean forget it. We all need to know that we need to clean up our act. And that will change the world hugely just by cleaning up our act and being able to hopefully avoid a lot of these toxins or stop them from being used in our farming, for instance. And I do believe actually that energetically, if we actually have realized what the energy can do to keep us all healthy, our plants can stay healthier. I have friends working on this in many areas, and there's lovely experiments out there that farmers have done by playing classical music to their plants.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, organic farmers. I think there's one in France, and there was a lovely post about him playing organic music to his plants.
And, organic music.
How beneficial to them. Yes. I have friends in the plasma energy community working on what they call Ganses for agriculture and health as well.
What's a Ganser?
That's another subject, really.
Just tell us what a Ganser is quickly, though, so we know.
Ganser is gas in a nano state. So I've listened in on quite a lot of the stuff, but I don't profess to be to understand it fully.
Okay.
It's a way of making a gravitational and magnetic field to help the health of our body's cells, and of ourselves, but also for plants we might be choosing to grow for ourselves as well.
Right.
I actually believe we can do it with intention, but we all have to get there to believe that we have that power and have that potential. We have to get there ourselves. We have to evolve to be able to do that ourselves.
Okay.
Probably the first state is to realize that we can heal ourselves.
Right. Okay, well, that is something that's beginning to be appreciated more by science. Just the sheer acknowledgement of how powerful the placebo effect is a pretty good indicator in that direction.
Well, and how powerful the nocebo effect is.
Thank you,
And that's very hard for me when I hear patients tell me that they were told they have 3 months to live. And I just think that's outrageous.
Mm.
I know doctors want to try to be realistic, but many of us know the story of the Greek man who was told that he had months to live in America, and he was from Greece, but he was living in America with his Greek wife, and he was 70, and it was a raging lung cancer, and he went to 10 consultants. They all told him that they couldn't do anything for him, so he decided to go back to his Greek island, Icaria, I think it is, one of the blue zones, and he outlived all those consultants and died at 103.
Mm. Just for listeners who don't know what a blue zone is, these are areas where people lived notably long lives.
Yes, under healthy conditions.
Yeah.
They all feel valued in their, this is what they talked about, feeling mm-hmm. valued in their community. And I think we have a good thing going here in Britain with our lovely villages. We have good communities and people can all work together and help each other in communities. I think we're getting better at that, actually. I do see great things going on in communities. And having moved around from village to village, it's very nice to see different villages and see what they're doing.
Mm. All right. Well, that's good news.
So
I wanted to ask you then, we were just talking about this kind of spectrum of effects, if you like, that cause illness, from the psychological and emotional at one end to the purely physical at the other, and things being spread across this spectrum. You yourself have been doing a job which, in most people's minds is a pretty mechanical one. A physiotherapist, that's like, moving things around, wobbling them a bit to loosen them up or whatever it is. And how have you, this view of yours that actually the mind and the emotions and everything play a large part in healing, how does that play into your own work?
Well, as a physio, you know, you're using your hands and you're like, well, did I take a really good subjective so I knew exactly where to go, or was it that I'm that sensitive that I knew where to go, you know, or what I was feeling?
Mm-hmm.
And so I enjoyed that, you know, it's like, wow, I can really feel this stuff. I was like, wow,
okay.
I can feel tensions in the body. I don't see auras like people, you know, some people see auras. We all have gifts and we can all develop gifts. So the feeling, that's what I was feeling in my hands, is from a lot of practice, from doing massage and
mm-hmm.
assessment, palpation, getting used to that. And with my movement and with all my sport, that helped me to break down patterns and address my own issues, I suppose, and feel where my own issues were, and to learn new skills, new sports or whatever. I also noticed that a lot of my patients had emotional aspects to their pain.
Right.
Some of them were more attached to it than others, and I don't mean knowingly attached. It was obviously subconscious, a lot of it. But there was a definite emotional aspect to it, and I was like, wow, well, I'm not a psychologist here, but I could see that there was patterning in their behaviour. In the same way that we'd look at a faulty movement pattern, there was behavioural patterning that was faulty. And if we could change those beliefs, as well as change the alignment of the body, that would help. And of course, that's what we're doing in the meditation. We actually get both aspects of that, as well as the energetic connection, connecting on a deeper level, either physically, emotionally, and energetically, to help align ourselves and clear out or unlayer the masking or the veil or whatever you want to call it, to clear out what doesn't serve us, so we can get down to more of our authentic being and live our lives from that point, that truth.
Mm-hmm. So you would say then, for your own working, you developed a kind of intuitive way of working, maybe. And would it also be fair to say that, in fact, when there's another party involved, i.e. some kind of practitioner, there's actually no chance that you can be purely physical, because there is already an interaction happening between two people. And so anything from a placebo to a nocebo could be happening.
Yeah, either way around. Yes. So, I mean, mostly people will only come to you if they feel that there's a good rapport between you.
Right.
Yeah. And I'd already joined our energy medicine group. You know, at one point I was thinking, gosh, maybe I can't call myself a physio anymore.
Right.
And luckily our chartered society, we had a group of energy medicine practitioners in our chartered society. So I was able to join them, which has been wonderful. I'm still involved with them, trying to keep that going, because I do think it's an important emerging way of treating people. So it's really still emerging, even though it's been around for a long time.
Okay.
A more holistic way of treating the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. So I wanted to ask a little bit about what you base your decisions on regarding treatment choices, because obviously... Well, first of all, you're quite unusual. There are not that many people who choose to have absolutely no orthodox therapy, unless possibly they've got what's an acknowledged very indolent condition. Maybe they might be more inclined to do. They might even be advised to watch and wait, you know. But most people will at least do some aspect of orthodox treatment. They might do a lot of other things as well. So you've made a choice there, which it seemed to be a choice you made based on a kind of inner knowing that just wasn't the thing for you. Do you weigh things up in any way, in a more kind of logical way, if you like? Are you interested in the science behind things, you know, with other choices you make, whether it's orthodox treatment or, you know, curcumin, whatever it is? Do you take in both the logical and the scientific, as well as how you respond to them?
Yes, I'm very interested in the science. The science is taking so long to catch up with what we intuitively know and what I've learned from my meditation and the experiences that I've had in my meditation. Of course, experiencing is really the best way of believing anything, really. Mm-hmm. And luckily, the science is catching up now, so I can back myself up more and more.
Right.
There was no way I was going to use chemotherapy. You know, when we've got an immune problem, I certainly wouldn't use anything that was going to knock out my immune system. There was no way I was going to. And they're getting better at targeting. But still, there's natural things that can do the job without hurting the body. So, yes, I'm very interested in the science. Wow. And have been following it, and but the logic is really a tricky one, because that can cause in itself, when people are trying to work something out logically, that is so hard to work out logically.
Yes.
It can kill people just by trying to work it out logically, and I'm sure that's why people get brain tumors. You know, I'm absolutely sure of it. I've had about five friends die of brain tumours in the last 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
From my age to, 20 years older, maybe. I'm 55. And myself, I've been having to release stuff from the fascia and my head for the last year and a half, nearly, since my legs. I then wrenched my shoulder, it brought out pain in both arms, which we would say it obviously was stuff that needed to be released. We do have a belief that, I do have a belief, and in energy medicine we have a belief that the universe is always trying to help you. It's a friendly universe. It's always trying to help you. So if you have an accident, it may be that the universe is actually trying to make you stop and look at your life and change the way you're doing something or the path that you're going down. And it's worth people really slowing down and looking at their lives and really considering where they're going and taking care of themselves, number one, and reevaluating how they're doing everything. Because we're living in such crazy times, everybody is running around far too frantically for their own well-being.
They are. Well, it's interesting that one you said about what the universe is up to. Some people wouldn't subscribe to that at all, of course. And actually, interestingly enough, though, you can look at the same situation and come to the same conclusion from two completely different points of view. One is, as you said, it's because the universe is trying to knock some sense into you and to get you to change direction. And the other one is, well, this has happened to me. What can I learn from it? It's got nothing to do with the universe doing anything. But it could lead you to the same conclusion.
Absolutely, yes. I like to look at my life as an adventure now.
Uh-huh.
Because it's supposed to be fun. We're supposed to be having a good life when we're here. I do believe we come with a purpose. I do believe that, and I think that may be something to do with the awful things that happen when someone dies much earlier than would be wanted by their relatives and friends.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason. It brings people together and it helps maybe to bring us to some realizations. I mean, I do think it's to help us wake up. It's always to help us wake up and look at life from a different point of view.
Mm. Well, you know, that one, again, you can look at it from both sides. I mean, I've been there. I've got a daughter who died when she was 23. So you can either say this is, the universe trying to teach me to wake up, or you can say, blimey, this has happened. I better wake up, which, are different ways of looking at things, but actually taking you to the same place, potentially. The in-between thing, the other option is not a great one, which is, why does life do this to me, and being a victim of the whole thing and learning nothing from it except getting fairly grumpy. But if you don't want to go down that route, then you do naturally go towards learning from whatever life happens to have thrown at you.
Yes. And it's very sad when people feel like they are a victim of
it is.
Whatever's, yeah, it's very sad.
It is.
And hopefully at some point they can turn it around.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so look, now I want to come back to the things that you've done to help yourself. And let's talk a little bit more about your bioenergy meditation, because obviously this is very important to you. Just let's be absolutely clear. Tell people exactly what this is, what you do, you know, how it looks.
Well, yes, you've met Ratu, I think, in the past.
I did, actually.
Yes. Can I ask, was that in London?
It was in London through a mutual friend, yes, that's right.
It must have been about 1999, was it?
Oh, blimey. You're pushing me now. It would be a bit later than that, I think, actually.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't know, because he couldn't come to this country, I think, because he wasn't allowed to work, in inverted commas, over here. I know he couldn't come after a certain time. And at the moment, he's choosing not to travel too far. He does go to Australia for retreats. He used to come to Italy. I started in 2009. I was introduced to it by a homeopath friend of mine. She thought that I might be interested. And I went along to her first session that she ran in a space in her house. And it just felt good to me. It just felt right. I liked it because it was energetic. And from that point of view, I mean, not just energy as in the energy, it was athletic. I was quite athletic. It was moving. It wasn't just sitting. Because when I was doing biathlon, I remember being in France in Agite, staying in Agite, and an Italian group came to stay, and they had a Buddhist monk with them, and I was thrilled. I was like, oh yes, a Buddhist monk, how exciting. Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to make sure I sleep in the bunk next to him, because I want some of that, you know, I want some of this energy. And they said, oh, come down, come and join us meditating in the morning. So at 7 in the morning, I went downstairs, and they were sat around the edge of the room, all meditating. And I thought, oh God, I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. So off I went training. My training was like meditation, you know. I was doing many hours of training on my own, in beautiful countryside, you know, snow, skiing along trails, beautiful trails, and that was like a meditation to me. So one lady I went to see said, you know, karmically, I think that I needed to do all this sport that I've done. So, which was, she said, maybe you've cleared that karma, some physical karma that she mentioned, you know, someone that I went to see once. So, anyway, I was introduced to it, and we were using music then, because a lot of people had come from the music industry to, they were DJs, and Ratu was quite happy for them to make up a playlist. So we used the music to help us get into a sort of meditative state.
So this is like a dance meditation, yeah?
Well, I wouldn't call it dance exactly, but we would be gently bouncing up and down and feeling for the energy to connect in through our head, let's say, and connect down to the earth through our feet. So we were using music just to help us in some way. Ratu had initially started it off. He'd had a calling to do this about 20, 25 years ago, and used the Gayatri Mantra, which is one of the ancient Sanskrit mantras for humanity. It's a beautiful mantra. And we're now back to using that. He did gradually teach us how to use that again. Mm-hmm. And we are actually even using quiet meditation at the start. We use mudras, we use different mantras, and different chanting, different mantras or bhajans. We do about a 20-minute quiet meditation at the beginning. We have about an hour dynamic meditation, which might be you might end up, so you follow the energy. You have to get sensitive to following what your body needs. And really, it's like a mini version of what's going on in your life and practicing to follow what feels good for you. So we've all really lost sight of what feels right to us because we were told in our growing up, we've been rather indoctrinated in doing what's right for, you know, we were rather told what we should do and shouldn't do, instead of feeling it innately in our body and being able to individualize ourselves well enough to just know what was right for us. So I think it's been great for me to get better at feeling what feels right to me. And so in the practice, you're really connecting in with the energy and following it to help you release what you've held on to in your body.
Okay. Well, that's useful. So it'd be fair to say that the two things then have come from this for you. One of them is that you think it has a healing property in itself, in as much as it's a way of getting rid of unwanted stuff in your physical being. And the other is that it's made you more connected with yourself and therefore more able to know what's the best thing to do for your own well-being.
Absolutely.
Right.
And it can boost it. Well, definitely with that, you're boosting your immune system. You're able to clear viruses out of the body and improve your whole immunity and healing of your body.
Okay.
As well as improve your physical well-being in terms of what people call arthritis or joint stiffness, or it helps you really supple up your body and soften the body, but connect on a deeper level. So your strength will just come naturally. If you trust and allow things to free up, then this lightness comes to the body, so you're more connected, more agile, and the strength then comes naturally on top of that, which is actually sort of how we were doing it in physio. But this way, I've done trainings in physio where we've looked up and down the body, found dysfunction, say, in the pelvis, in the foot, in the knee, or all the way up to the cranium. So I've done trainings where we looked throughout the body, found the problems, found the dysfunctions, and then we had to work out which was the main driver. Well, quite often there's more than one driver, depending on if you're in a sitting position or standing position. And it's quite complicated to get that right, to really know, okay, change the cranium, because the cranium torsions right and left as well and should move, but we get blocked and stuck in a torsion. The pelvis, usually on people, they're stuck in a torsion. And this is quite a big point. They've even shown that in the polyvagal theory, it even makes a difference on your pelvic alignment, you know. And most of us these days are stuck in a posterior tilt as well as a torsion in our pelvis. And that's probably why most people getting hip and knee arthritis, what's called knee and hip arthritis, and requiring hip replacements rather an early age.
Yes.
And we could be changing all this, and that would be a huge saving on our healthcare, on our national health budget. Huge one.
Okay. Well, look, you've told me about cannabis, you've told me about bioenergy meditation, and you've talked about some aspects of nutrition that you've worked with. Does that summarize everything you've done in order to meet your diagnosis of cancer?
Yes, apart from listening to all the other stuff that I listened to to gain more knowledge about it. The cannabis has been an amazing one for me, really, because I haven't even made the oil from it. I just use the leaves and I use the whole plant in my food.
Okay.
So in the I haven't had to make the oil. I thought, well, why do I need to extract the oil when I can just use the plant in my food? Why not? And so I use it raw in the morning because that won't give me any sort of wooziness to it. And what I found, because of course I didn't know how it was going to affect me, I had to sort of start slowly and see how it was going to start to me. The first time I plucked a bud off my plants, I grew it 2 years in a row. So the first time I plucked a bud from the plant, I sauteed it up in some coconut oil and I ate it like a little hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah.
And had quite a nice effect. And I had a meditation with it, with my Skype group, because we have Skype sessions. And I was quite nice and relaxed. I noticed it helped me drop some of the resistance to getting into that connection. Right. So it was dropping my resistance, helping me drop the resistance. Well, then as I used it, I found that it really made me, what helped me connect deeper to stretch out and release more superficial structures, and get this deeper connection so that I could release more superficial structures. So it was actually incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. Now I've got to the stage where I can do that without it, so I need it less and less, although I still feel it's quite useful for me to take. I'm still don't feel fully ready to drop that yet.
Okay. So you've just described reasons for taking it, which are more to do with this process you're talking about of releasing stuff that's built up in your body over time. You haven't mentioned it on the front of how it might be working as an anti-cancer mechanism at all. Do you take that into account, or is that not something you're worried about?
Well, yes, but it's all part and parcel. The releasing in the body is stuff that I've held onto through my perception of not being safe. And I need to now release that from my body, knowing that I am safe, and keep working on that. So it's all part and parcel. I'm absolutely sure it's helping my immune system. I'm just at the stage where I'm feeling stronger in myself physically, because I actually got to a point where I was quite fatigued, whether that was just my mind or my body, or my body needed the rest. You know, in the meditation we actually say the soul is never tired, sick, and is always happy. But I would have times where, and I still am taking it easy relatively, and allowing myself to sleep if I need to, but I might be awake till quite late at night. So I'm really allowing my body to do whatever it feels right to it. Right. And I have had experiences of out-of-body experiences, which, you know, when you've had experiences and other wonderful experiences, it's really hard to go back to what people see as their normal reality when I've seen things that I've seen and felt things that I've felt. So I know there's a much bigger, a more beautiful life that we can lead, healthy lives, and that this is a really phenomenal way of treating people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, look, we're just about out of time. Can you tell me, have you been back to the doctor at any point, the oncologist? Does anybody had a look at you and decided, well, you're living well with cancer, you haven't got cancer anymore, you didn't seem to die like they thought. You know, has there been any kind of response to your situation?
Yeah, so I went to see my doctor a couple of weeks ago. I hadn't seen him for about a year and a half. Probably last May I'd seen him. And I had a blood test done and everything seems good. So
fantastic.
So I haven't... Otherwise,
right.
I did go to thermal imaging. I went for two thermal images, no, three. I went for a first one in January, just after I'd been diagnosed, and in London with a doctor on Harley Street. Yeah. And that thermal image showed that my right breast had level 3 activity, which is minimal activity for the cancer, for the activity. 4 or 5 would be slightly concerning for people.
Right.
In August, I went for another one, which showed level 2. On that side, maybe the other side as well. So that's normal, basically. I went the following year, and again, it was level 2. So I actually didn't go last year. A friend suddenly took me up for one time and paid for me, even, which was very sweet of her, because financially it's been quite a struggle for me, everything. Sure. I mean, you know, people maybe wouldn't even know how much I've struggled with it, because I've got on and done quite a lot. But then when I'm at home, I'm resting or trying to do whatever I need to just move me one step forwards. So I didn't go this year, the last summer. because I didn't feel it was really necessary. I could see that things were improving.
Well, look, that's seriously good news. Lastly, very quickly, can you tell us about your plans? I understand you intend to start teaching or sharing some of your accumulated insights into health and healing. What have you got in mind?
Well, so we already have several groups in the UK for the bioenergy meditation. We've just got our Southwest group going, and there are lovely groups in Ireland and, you know, this country in Wales. There's quite a few retreats going on with different friends that are running those. And then we've got our Southwest group going. We're mostly doing it once a month at the moment at Templecombe Village Hall. I try and put up posts on Facebook. I didn't for this last one. We've got about 15 to 20 people, 25 people maybe even in that group, depending on, you know, who can come once a month. And I'm hoping to get a local group going. It is quite hard to know how to introduce it to people, to even get them to a hall to start it, but that's what I'm working on.
Local means, you know, let's be clear where you are.
I'm in Tollard Royal, which is on the Dorset-Wiltshire border.
Okay.
Locally in a village hall or up in Shaftesbury. I have been talking with some physios in Shaftesbury, so they have a nice space I could possibly use there. Yes.
Okay, that's great. All right, well, you never know who's listening. All right, well, look, we're going to end it there. Thanks very much. We've certainly been all sorts of interesting places in today's talk. Thanks very much. Very unusual stuff we've talked about today.
Oh, thank you so much, Robin. Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. You can find links to the items mentioned by Fiona by going to the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk and clicking the show logo that's on the homepage. Those of you in Manchester or nearby, do check out the Cancer Wellness Day on the 27th of April that Yes to Life is running. Look on the Yes to Life website, again that's yestolife.org.uk, and click Events in the left-hand sidebar. Or alternatively, you can look on the Yes to Life Facebook page for details and for booking. Thanks so much for listening today. I look forward to introducing you to another fascinating guest in next week's show. Goodbye.